नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नायद्वचश्चित्रपदं हरेर्यशो जगत् पवित्रं प्रगृणीतकरिचित् तद्वायसं तीर्थं उशन्ति
मानसा
न यत्र हंसा निरमन्त्यु शिक्षयाः न यद्वचश्चित्रपदं हरेर्यशो जगत् पवित्रं प्रगृणीत कर्हिचित् तद्वायसं तीर्थं उशन्ति
मानसा
न यत्र हंसा निरमन्त्यु शिक्षयाः न Not yet that vachaha vocabulary chitra padam decorative harehe of the Lord yasha glories jagat universe pavitram sanctified, pragridita, described, karhichit, hardly, tat, that, vayasab, crows, tirtab, place of pilgrimage, ushanti, think, Manasaha, saintly persons, na, not, yatra, where, hamsaha, all perfect beings, niramanti, take pleasure, ushikshaya, those who reside in the transcendental abode. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. Purport. Crows and swans are not birds of the same feather because of their different mental attitudes. The food of workers or passionate men are compared to the crows, whereas the all-perfect saintly persons are compared to the swans. The crows take pleasure in a place where garbage is thrown out, just as the passionate food of workers take pleasure in wine and women and places for gross sense pleasure. The swans do not take pleasure in the places where crows are assembled for conferences and meetings. They are instead seen in the atmosphere of natural scenic beauty, where there are transparent reservoirs of water, nicely decorated with stems of lotus flowers, in variegated colors of natural beauty. That is the difference between the two classes of birds. Nature has influenced different species of life with different mentalities, and it is not possible to bring them up into the same rank and file. Similarly, there are different kinds of literature for different types of men of different mentality. Mostly the market literatures, which attract men of the crows categories, are literatures containing refused remnants of sensuous topics. They are generally known as mundane talks in relation with the gross body and the subtle mind. They are full of subject matter described in decorative language, full of mundane similes and metaphorical arrangements. Yet with all that, they do not glorify the Lord. Such poetry and prose on any subject matter is considered decoration on a dead body. Spiritually advanced men who are compared to the swans do not take pleasure in such dead literatures, which are sources of pleasure for men who are spiritually dead. These literatures in the mode of passion and ignorance are distributed under different labels, but they can hardly help the spiritual urge of the human being. And thus the swan-like, spiritually advanced men have nothing to do with them. Such spiritually advanced men are called also manasa, because they keep up the standard of transcendental voluntary service to the Lord on the spiritual plane. This completely forbids fruitive activities for gross bodily sense satisfaction or subtle speculation of the material egoistic mind. Social literary men, scientists, mundane poets, theoretical philosophers and politicians who are completely absorbed in the material advancement of sense pleasure are all dolls of the material energy. They take pleasure in a place where rejected subject matters are thrown. According to Swami Sridhar, this is the pleasure of the prostitute hunters. But literatures which describe the glories of the Lord are enjoyed by the Paramahamsas, who have grasped the essence of human activities. Narada speaking strongly, but he has a right to speak like that. It is true that most people are speaking nonsense and listening to nonsense, like crows who like to eat garbage in a filthy place. Tadvayasam Tirtham, the place where men assemble to speak on mundane topics, is like the garbage dump where the crows come together, and they also make a lot of sound. Shakespeare says, 'Tis a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. This is mundane literature. Human beings, as opposed to the birds and beasts, have the power of articulate speech. They have language. Other animals don't. They may have some rudimentary form of communication. Somehow the ants walking up the wall are able to communicate to each other where the good food is. And they all come clambering down the wall to get some huge thing which they carry away. Some dead bug or something. There is some sort of communication, even in these lower species, some means, but not what we call language, that can actually convey logical and sublime ideas and poetry. The ants may be able to give some signals, but they can't create poetry or literature or science and mathematics. That they cannot do. Human beings have this power only. And it's a power that is in constant use, just like we have certain bodily functions that go on constantly. These are mostly automatic functions, autonomous functions, which means involuntary. We don't think about them and we don't control them consciously. Our heartbeat, our breathing, the flow of the blood through our veins and arteries, these things go on without our conscious intervention. In fact, we have almost no conscious control over them. Okay, breathing we can control consciously. And we can even practice pranayama, yoga exercise, to consciously control the breath. But other functions, like the flow of the blood, or even the heartbeat, maybe a yogi can control them, an ordinary person cannot. But language is a voluntary function. That means we talk when we want to talk. It's not like your eyes blink automatically. Try to not to blink. Keep your eyes open and don't blink them. You can't do it. They will blink. They will blink. The unconscious brain will send a message every 3 or 4 seconds to the eyes, blink. And you cannot stop it unless you just keep your eyes closed. But if you open them, they will blink. But you can consciously control your speech. That's also difficult to do it to an extreme. But generally, we speak what we think. Although some people are so foolish, they speak without thinking. You know, their tongue is way ahead of their brains. But normally, a sensible person will speak what he's thinking. He'll think before he speaks. And a civilized person will be careful what he says. Will have some control over his speech. Urge is there, but it's not a completely involuntary urge. Now, an adult goes to the toilet, not in his clothes, but he goes to a secluded place and takes off his clothes and goes to the toilet. An infant can't control, but an adult can. So it's a voluntary function in adults, excretion. Similarly, the excretion out of our mouth, talking, is for at least a civilized or a mature person, is voluntary. You can control what you say. But uncivilized people, or people who think they're civilized, are actually speaking mostly nonsense and listening to nonsense, even though it is a function that can be put under control. The tongue is very voracious. Tar mo je jivaati, lobo moi sudurmati. The tongue has bidirectional function. Not only is it speaking, but it's also eating. And that is also a voracious urge. But a civilized person maintains some self-control over what he says and what he eats. If you can control the tongue, then all other self-control is easy. People try to control their tongue by eating sattvic food and by speaking sattvic good topics. There's a class of literature in Sanskrit called Subhashitam. Clever speech, clever words from wise men, but it's still mundane, just mundane. Some of it's edifying, some of it is ethical, and Prabhupada even would cite the Subhashitams of Chanaka Pandit because he was very expert in the dealings of human society. But still, these are mundane topics. Even if you are speaking with refined language, even if you're having some success in controlling your speaking function in the mode of goodness, What is it? Satya Priyata Hitam Chayat. Anudvega Karam Vakyam. Satyam Priyahitam Chayat. Oh, what is it? Third line. Anyway, this is austerity of speech or self-control of speech in the mode of goodness. To speak without disturbing others. To speak the truth, but speak in a way that will please. You can speak the truth and anger everybody. So what's the use? You won't change anybody by speaking in such a way that they get disturbed and angry. So you have to have all three qualities: undisturbing, pleasant, and truthful. This is a control of speech. But it's just in the mode of goodness. Still, according to Narada, this is Maya. You're still a crow. You're just a white crow, not a black crow. Yeah. Or maybe a dove. Yeah. But still a dirty bird. Yeah. You want to keep a bird? Your child wants a bird. Be aware that birds are very dirty. Yeah, they will kick their excretion all over the house. And their feathers and other things. Even a dove is also a dirty bird. A dove is just another species of pigeon. So even a white dove is also a dirty bird. He also creates a lot of garbage, and his eating habits are not up to the Brahminical standard either. So a man, even who speaks politely and is speaking elegantly, he's studying and then even composing poetry and literature. Even Kalidas and other great poets, although some are of the opinion that Kalidas is a Vaishnava, so maybe I shouldn't pick him, but even great poets, even Shakespeare and Rabindranath Tagore, Prabhupada said, Bhagavatam is not an ordinary literature. It could not have been composed by Shakespeare or Tagore. Rabindranath Tagore. So we'll pick those two examples. Even they are just crows, because their literature is mundane. Mundane poetry does not have the real potency to pacify the soul, although it pretends to be. It is not real poetry. According to the best experts on poetry, Sanskrit poetry, the soul of poetry is rasa. And the prana, or life air of poetry, is the power of suggestion of words that evokes rasa. You cannot evoke rasa, even in the heart of a person who is attuned, who is a rasika. But just saying the word bhava will not stimulate bhava. You have to suggest it in subtle ways by your clever use of language. An expert poet can evoke in a suitable, in a attuned, sympathetic audience, he can evoke the feeling, the experience of rasa. But not with mundane poetry. The rasa of mundane poetry is the rasa of eating stool. You know, description, instead of the description of the loving pastimes of Krishna and his consorts, Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, Lakshmi Narayan, Rukmini Dwarkadish, instead of these loving dealings, the dealings of ordinary men and women. So instead of the transcendental taste, you're getting the taste of eating feces, eating stool and blood, that rasa. Or the great heroes. Krishna is the ultimate hero. And some of Krishna's devotees are great heroes, like Yudhishthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Hanuman. These are great heroes. But literature that describes mundane heroes also has no real taste. There's no real rasa there. It's just a perversion of rasa. Mundane literature does not convey rasa, not actual rasa. No matter what Bharat Muni and all his followers say, the real rasa is to be found only in that literature, that poetry, and drama, which glorifies the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees. So therefore the devotees of the Lord who are like swans, the transcendental birds, Hamsa, they should not have interest in mundane literature. Why should they when they have the Srimad Bhagavatam? Sarvavedanta Saram Hi Sri Bhagavatam Ishiyate Tad Rasamrita Triptasya Nanyatra Syat Rati Kvachit. Srimad Bhagavatam contains the essence of all Vedanta literature. It contains the deepest transcendental philosophy, and it's also poetry. What book can you find? There are a few books like that. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur wrote books that were both poetry and philosophy. Jiva Goswami was both a poet and a great philosopher. So, but the original book that is both poetry and philosophy is Srimad Bhagavatam. Tadra Samrita Triptasya Nanyatra Syat Rati Kvachit. One who is feeling pleasure from relishing the Srimad Bhagavatam, he shouldn't have any interest in any other literature. If he's still interested in reading books that are not connected with the Bhagavatam, then he's not developed the proper taste. He's failed to develop his taste for Srimad Bhagavatam. It's described that there are different classes of spiritual literature. Vedas, Puranas, and you can also talk about Kavya, poetry. There's spiritual poetry. There are many great spiritual poets. In our own Gaudiya line, there are great poets like Rupa Goswami, Prabodhananda Saraswati, many others, many great poets who wrote wonderful poetry and drama. So Kavya can also be transcendental in the hands of a pure devotee. Not only the original Vedas, which nobody wrote, not only the Puranas, which were given to us by Vyasa and other sages, but even books written by later devotees of later ages who are pure devotees, they're also Shastra. Kavya, poetry, can also be scripture. But Vedas, Puranas, and poetry speak in three different voices. So I don't remember the exact words. But the meaning is that the Vedas, the original Vedas, speak like a father, giving stern instruction. You should do this and do that, and not do that. Injunction, vidhi, not exactly command. It's not like a master talking to a slave, but a father talking to a son. And not a dictatorial father, but a reasonable father. Telling the son, if you want your life to be successful, you should do like this. I won't force you, but I'm telling you, you should do like this. And don't do like that. That is the voice of the Vedas. Vedas don't demand, but they strongly suggest in a fatherly voice. That is vidhi, injunction. Injunction is vidhi lin, you should. Not you must or I'll kill you, you know, but you should. If you know what is good for you, you should do this. That is optative or vidhi lin. Tasmad guru abhigachit. One should go to a guru. If you don't want to go to a guru, nobody will force you. Nobody will force you. But you should. If you're intelligent, you should do it. That is vidhi or injunction, the voice of the Vedas. Puranas in Itihasa speak in a different voice, like a friend, giving friendly advice, telling stories, Itihasa, to make a point without insisting like a father. A friend does not speak as sternly as a father. He tells stories and tries to influence his friend to do the right thing, not to do the wrong thing. You know the story of Ramayana, how the friend is speaking, how Rama defeated the great demon Ravana. So we should learn from that story to behave like Ram, to be righteous, and not to behave like Ravana. This is telling stories. The Puranas speak in that voice. And poetry is like a lover speaking to her beloved, flattering him and kindly suggesting that he do this and do that and not do that. Not so much on the basis of logic, just on the basis of charm. That is the voice of poetry. Trivik Bhagavatam Punaha. But the Bhagavatam is speaking in all three voices. The stern voice of injunction, Vedic injunction, the friendly voice of Puranic stories, and the voice of poetry. Srimad Bhagavatam is all three. So whatever you're interested in, whatever class of literature you're interested in, fatherly, friendly, or loving literature, law book, or history book, or poetry book, whatever kind of book you're interested in reading, Bhagavatam is all three, and is speaking in all three voices. You want poetry? You will find the original poetry in Srimad Bhagavatam. And all our acharyas in our line who are writing poetry are basing it on the original source of Srimad Bhagavatam. We read the books of the Goswamis because they are not competing with the Bhagavatam. They are all derived from the Bhagavatam and directing our attention back to the Bhagavatam. Therefore, it's not that we only read Bhagavatam and don't read the books of Lord Chaitanya's devotees. Those great acharyas have written books that supplement the Bhagavatam and glorify it. That kind of literature is approved by Narada Muni. But most of the things you'll find, even in the biggest bookstores, you can go to Gangaram's on MG Road in Bangalore, and they've got, I don't know, how many 100,000 books there you can pick out. But except for the few books that are on the right topics, a few copies of Bhagavatam and Gita, and a few other transcendental literatures they might have somewhere on the shelf, 999,000 of those books are useless. Of course, if you have some specific need for information for your service, you know, you have a certain, you know, motorcycle and you have to repair it, you go get a book on how to repair, you know, a particular model of motorcycle. Okay, some for need of your service, you can read something. But don't consider it literature. It's not going to massage your soul or even entertain you. Not if you have a taste for this transcendental literature. Test is, you should not anymore have such a taste for material literature. Otherwise, there's something deficient in your attraction. If you're still attracted to mundane literature, music, movies, newspapers, radio, and so on. Hare Krishna. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Hear some great heroes, not the real great heroes, but then other activities like someone fighting with 25-30 people and killing them and defeating all of them. So that also gives exactly that you're saying, that's not a rasa, because
it's only a reflection of rasa. Because the vishaya and ashraya must be transcendental. Ordinary man cannot be a real hero. If he's not God or empowered by God, a great devotee of God, then he cannot be a real vira, hero. And the ordinary loving dealings of men and women, ordinary men and women, is despicable. It's the last thing we should want to hear about. How ordinary men and women are imitating, you know, the Lord in his divine potency with their romances. This is the garbage that we should want to, we should never go near. You know, do you want to go to the garbage dump and stick your face in the garbage? So how can you call that rasa? The taste of it is abominable. And the heroism is maybe not as bad. You know, it's a lesser degree of abominable. But it's also just foolish. All these great kings marching back and forth over the surface of the earth, trying to conquer. And they're all gone. They haven't accomplished anything. Just fighting and shedding blood and trying to conquer the earth. And the earth is just laughing at them. They're just all names in a book. They're all come and gone. So what's the greatness of these heroes? That they were good at shedding blood and killing people. And maybe getting themselves killed. Now, just like the very beautiful monument at Kusuma Sarovara, 1 mile before Radhakunda, or after Radhakunda, coming back on the parikrama. Kusuma Sarovara, where the gopis go to pick flowers for worshipping Suryadev every day in the late morning. You've seen Kusuma Sarovara. Those buildings were built around 1780 by a local king. Actually, not by him, but by his family, because he was very courageous Hindu king, and he decided to stand up and rebel against the Mughal government in Delhi. And he brought his army out to fight the Mughals and got himself killed, you know, in a few minutes. You know, big hero, but he just managed to get himself killed on the battlefield. Running around and trying to be a big hero, he just got shot. That was it. He's dead. But his family were very attached to him, so they built these monuments. The buildings that are there now, you know, the buildings were not built specifically to glorify Krishna so much. They were built in memory of this king who got himself killed trying to become a hero. But who remembers him? Yeah. Now it's the buildings he used to glorify Krishna. What kind of hero is that? You manage to get yourself killed. Or manage, if you're an expert hero, you manage to get a lot of other people killed. So, a person whose taste is not distorted by material disease doesn't enjoy such things. Okay? Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Thank you, Krishna.